Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:02 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is December 8th, and I thought I'd kick off with oil prices. So there was news this morning that there was a small leak from the Keystone pipeline, and for a brief moment, oil prices rallied and then reversed. So we're still in an environment where we have a contango in oil prices, and it's a contango over now. It's over the next 6 months. So what we have is evidence increasingly of a divergence between what is going on in the wider market and what we have in the futures market. Because if we were to simply look at the media, well, we would be presented with all these stories about how oil demand is a constant, really. Nobody really seems to talk about demand, but they talk about supply all the time. And talking about the strategic reserve that needs to be replenished by the USA, and then other analysts talking about this price cap on Russian oil and what kind of mess that's going to make of the global trade, and what will Russia's response be to that? Will they then create a price floor below which they'll refuse to sell oil? And then we have China's removing of COVID restrictions, and is that going to create additional demand for oil? But these are significant issues, but the price still is going down. And the contango peaked at the beginning of this year. And historically, when the contango peaks, it's usually the top of the market because it represents the pinnacle of a supply shortage. So we don't have a problem with a supply shortage in the short term. Now, it doesn't mean that we can't have a problem with a supply shortage in the future, but we don't have it right now. So oil prices continue to come back down. And that's removing one of the sources of inflation. So inflationary pressures are going to start moderating. And oil is a big part of that. And we can then think about gasoline. So obviously there are issues with refining, and a lot of refineries are incapable of increasing, and some refineries have been closed down. But gasoline prices are now half of what they were at the beginning of this year, and coming back down into the underlying base formation, and are now trading below the 1,000-day moving average. I wouldn't pay too much attention to the 1,000-day moving average because we don't have a long-term trend here. But nonetheless, prices are certainly pulling back. Then we can think about the semiconductors sector. The lead time to expect semiconductors is now contracting. And it was as many as 26 weeks in the summer, and it fell by 6 weeks in November. So now we're down to about 3 or 4 months. And that number is going to continue to contract. And the number of containers that are on the sea, and that is also contracting really significantly. One thing that I find especially interesting is the dirty tanker index. So this is really oil prices. There is a tendency to think of shipping as a simple or an amorphous sector, but all those ships carry different sorts of stuff. So the dirty tanker index was at a new high 2 weeks ago. Now it's starting to come back down again. And the last time we got up to 2,500 was back in 2004. And even at the peak of the energy sector move in 2008, prices were not this high. But of course, back then we'd had a good long period to build more ships, and more ships aren't going to be delivered to the global shipping fleet for the next couple of years. But one thing that I'm very aware of is that it's quite normal for the commodities sector and the highly cyclical portion of the commodity sector to do exceptionally well in the latter stages of an economic expansion. So Ardmore Shipping was up in excess of 400% this year. Now, it was off its lows in here today. So we're getting a little bit of a rebound after three consecutive days on the downside, but it's not holding the move through the full day. So we could be looking at a really quite large downside key reversal. And from the region of the peaks back in 2014, which was also the peak of the Dirty Tanker Index, and excuse me, that was 2004. And this was a meaningful peak in oil prices back in 2014-15 before prices then collapsed. These are exceptionally cyclical shares, and it's not at all unusual for some of them to go bust. So Frontline is now a Bermuda company listed in Norway, used to be just a Norwegian company, and it has come down from 1800 in 2008 to 129 now, and is still now only at the upper side of the base formation. And I think it's very unlikely that it's going to be able to break on the upside on this occasion. So we're definitely getting a lot of back and forth action. And of course, then there's also the industrial metal miners, which have also been doing really quite well. So up from the lows in 2000, these shares are up well in excess of 100%. They're at new all-time highs. Now, valuations are really low and dividends really high. So BHP has got a dividend yield right now of 14.5% and an estimated PE of 11. Rio Tinto has also got these big chunky dividends and is rebounding now back up towards the upper side of the range. So these shares, they've done very well, and they're not rushing to increase supply. So this is by far the most important point when it comes to miners, that when they go off and start borrowing money they don't have on the bet that prices will stay high forever, and then go off into unknown areas and start digging big holes in the ground in the expectation that they'll be able to make a profit from it. That's usually when prices underperform. So they're being very cautious right now about how much money they're going to spend, and that's equally true of the big oil companies. It also means, though, that they're not going to be as levered to the commodity prices in future, and they are extractive businesses. So the LME Metals Index is firming. So that's generally positive still for the industrial metal miners. But I wouldn't anticipate that they're going to be able to hold this relative performance into the end of a bull market, because ultimately demand will falter. So it's really a big bet on just how strong an economic revival are we going to have in China. And we've definitely seen that the pullback we saw yesterday was at least partially reversed on the Hang Seng in here today. So it was up 630 points and still pausing here in the region of the 200-day moving average. The sector that I think is where China really has a competitive advantage now is in batteries. So CATL is bouncing from the region of the 200-day moving average, and it's not listed outside of China, so it's difficult for foreigners to buy. But BYD is listed in Hong Kong, and it's going to have access to CATL's cheaper batteries. And the share is bouncing from the region of the 1,000-day moving average and the region of the lows from earlier this year. And I think this could be potentially meaningful support. The reality is China made a bet a decade ago on securing lithium supply. And when we think about Lithium Americas, well, they've built a 40,000 ton capacity lithium project in Argentina, and their partner is Ganfeng Lithium, And that lithium is going to be going to China. It's going to be processed in China and it's going to be used in China and ultimately then potentially exported from China. So they have another project in Nevada, Thacker Pass, and they want to get the US government to build the mine for them. And in order to do that, they're going to have to split up the company. Well, I think this is just a clear example of other countries trying to play catch up. And playing catch up isn't going to be easy. It's most particularly not going to be easy for Europe. If we look at the lithium projects that were trying to get started in Europe, I think there was one in Serbia or somewhere definitely in the Balkans, and another one in Portugal had mass protests on a local level to stop the production of lithium. So where is Europe going to get the lithium from? They haven't been investing in new mines. A lot of the leases and relationships in Latin America have been taken over by China. North America has some lithium, but they haven't built the mines yet. So that puts China in a really strong position here in the electric vehicle market. And not only that, but China also processes most of the aluminium, most of the coal, most of the copper. So when we think about energy, we think about renewables, it's going to be very hard to do anything in those sectors without some buy-in from China. And that means that those companies are going to be taking dividends out of, or taking a piece of the action from all of the automotive manufacturers internationally. When we think about Volkswagen, I think the valuation is really interesting. It's got an estimated PE of 5 and it yields 4. But then just look at the balance sheet. They have a market cap of 80 million. The enterprise value is 75 billion. So I think that's interesting. They've got preferreds on their balance sheet, which is basically their ownership of Porsche, almost completely offsets their debt. So there's a lot of financial engineering going on inside the company. And they have free cash flow of 23 billion and cash of 56 billion. So their free cash flow plus cash almost equates to the entire enterprise value of the company because of this financial engineering and preferred stock two-step they've been doing relative to their debt. But the share is trading at this low valuation for one good reason, and it's because Volkswagen is beholden to their labor union. And how are they going to fire the number of people that are they're going to need to fire in order to transition away from a dependence on internal combustion engines and into electric vehicles? Electric vehicles have fewer parts, so therefore there's a huge ancillary sector that is simply not going to be required in future if all these plans for electric vehicles proceed. And there's every reason to expect that they are going to proceed. There's this energy crisis in Europe, and everyone is worrying about dependence on fossil fuels. So they all want electric vehicles. Everyone wants to have clean air. They don't want to have polluting vehicles driving around cities and towns. So diesel vehicles are being banned left and right. But what they is there's just no discussion about how many people, how many union and high-paying manufacturing jobs are going to be lost as a result of these actions. And it would be very easy to say, well, this is in service to the environment and in service to the to our commitments to the globe. But the reality is that literally millions of people are going to lose their jobs as a result of this. Everyone was worrying a decade ago about when are robots going to take my job? And robots haven't taken jobs. In fact, what we see increasingly is that when technology is introduced into the manufacturing sector, it improves efficiency and it rescues the manufacturing of countries. But what nobody was talking about is how are we going to get over the fact that renewable energy is going to steal my job? And that's exactly what's going to happen as a result of this increase in electric vehicles. So there is undoubtedly going to be a rebellion against this trend. And that is in the future. So in the meantime, we have downward pressure on oil, and these companies are going to spend a ton of money on building new electric vehicle manufacturing. They're going to have to deal with their unions, and ultimately, they're going to then have to turn around and rebuild all of their infrastructure for manufacturing vehicles in the future. And this is not that different from what miners tend to do. And historically, miners are the ones who make the massive, big management mistakes at the top of the cycle. And on this occasion, it's the automotive companies. And that's why they're trading at these low valuations, because there are really significant challenges with trying to make money from this environment. So now let's just think about the bond market. So bond yields continue to come down. They were a little bit steadier in here today, but there's a clear trend on the downside. And this is a meaningful pullback. It's at least as large as the pullback we saw in the middle of the year. And we're back testing the upper side of that range. So the big question, of course, is we'll have PPI figures out in the next 10 minutes. But ultimately, inflation is going to roll over because liquidity is contracting. Central banks are raising interest rates. Central bank balance sheets are beginning to be unwound. So money is being siphoned out of the system. And ultimately, that's going to result in higher unemployment. And it's when there's higher unemployment, it's after that central banks begin to cut interest rates. And they're not going to do it until they see it. So that would imply that this tightening liquidity environment is going to proceed, and we are going to have a deflationary shock potentially at the beginning of next year. So it's normal to expect in that circumstance that bond yields should come downwards, and that's going to put pressure on stocks. So the Nasdaq 100, it's in positive territory today, but certainly not in a dynamic manner. And it's still pausing below the psychological 12,000 level. In the UK, the FTSE 250 is pulling back from the region of the 1,000-day moving average and was down in a reasonably dynamic manner so far this week. The dollar, however, continues to decline. And I think that there is ample potential for a dollar decline to proceed further as we look at the significant potential for economic underperformance. So gold prices remain really quite steady and back testing the region of the $1,800 area. If the dollar continues lower, I just anticipate that gold will continue to move upwards in a lockstep manner. So we're certainly still in a benign environment for gold overall. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.